This is Joe Basso with Music Radar, and I'm speaking with Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Mike, how you doing?
Doing great, Joe.
Fantastic. Well, you guys are putting out a live anthology. It's called Live Anthology, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, which is a multi-disc set and quite a lot of tracks. I imagine this was a massive undertaking.
It really was. It took us a couple of years, really, from the first idea to do the highlights of our 30 years live. There was a lot of searching through old tapes and trying to find tapes, and a lot of listening, but we found some gems, and so we figured it's worth putting out.
Now, did the band always record its shows? Because you have tracks going back to 1980, maybe 79 here.
Well, in the early days, it was all analog. We would record occasionally, and we were able to find some of those old tapes, which, of course, had to be baked and transferred to digital because they were rotting. But
right.
And then the last several years, now with the advent of Pro Tools and digital recording, I think they record every show.
Right.
It was quite an undertaking.
Who all was involved in the process? Because I would imagine that going through so many tapes, so many songs, so many different performances, it could lead to some arguments. Like, no, this version of Here Comes My Girl from 86 is the best, and so on. Who all was involved?
Well, it was basically me and Tom and Ryan Ulott, our engineer. Producer, and he gets huge credit for this. I mean, Tom came to me originally and said, you know, I want to do this. Look, we should go through all our stuff and pick out the highlights of all our live performances for the last 30 years. I'm busy. You go do it. So I got Ryan, and we got a rough outline of the different decades, and we got a rough approach, and then I sent him on a search, and he went and found the stuff and compiled it for us. And then as we narrowed it down, we brought Tom back on board, and he got real excited and got hands-on involved in finishing it with us.
Now, are you the kind of guy that listens to recordings of shows right after they're done? You listen on the bus or a plane or whatever and see how the show went? Or were so many of these just pleasant surprises or or horrors, if you will?
Well, there were some rough spots. We had one criteria, because there was so much stuff to listen to. I mean, you could lose your mind if you listened to everything, you know, under a microscope. But we just basically got the attitude that focus on the vocal.
Okay.
With all these live shows, you know, almost every time, if the vocal is really good, the band is almost always good too. You might have other takes where, oh, that was an incredible guitar solo, but, you know, Tom couldn't hear himself, the vocal sound, the mic was broken, or there's some technical problem. So basically, we just went ahead, if the vocal is great, then we'll start with that, and then we'll see if everything else holds up. And that seemed to be a pretty good way to go. To answer your question, no, I don't listen to stuff after the shows. I'm usually on down the road and on to the next thing, but it was very enlightening and exciting to hear some of this stuff after all these years. And to hear the different eras of the band and the excitement, for instance, of the early lineup back in the late 70s and 80s, and to hear how kinetic that energy was when we were, you know, just breaking through and all excited and young. And then later on, as the band matured and changed, that was exciting, too, to hear the growth. So we were all really very, I mean, the reason we're putting it out is we're really proud of it. We were surprised and proud at how good the stuff holds up, so we wanted to share it with everybody.
What was it like hearing some of the band members who are no longer with you?
Well, that was hard.
Yeah.
Especially with Howie, there were some things that we were listening to where he was singing so good, and it made us sad to, you know, for him. Wish he was still here, but, you know, it was great. We found some stuff with Stan Lynch on the drums that was incredible. You know,
yeah.
It was really, he was always really great live, and it was nice to hear that, you know, wow, we didn't suck. We were actually pretty good, you know. So, yeah, it's a journey, you know. It's like, it reminded me of when we just did this film, this Running Down a Dream film,
sure.
Which is a retrospective, and we've done, you know, it's kind of staggering. This band has been together so long, and we've just had our nose down doing the work along the way. And when you look back and you go, wow, we really did all that. You know, that's a lot of work. And so you kind of get a perspective on what you've done, and it was nice to see that a lot of the music really held up well.
You mentioned the film, Running Down a Dream, which I have seen, which I really loved. I thought it was quite good. Just to touch on that a second, Was it interesting to work with Peter Bogdanovich, who was not a rock and roll fan, really?
It was, because it's funny, because when he first started hanging around with us, he didn't know anything about bands or rock and roll, and I saw him start to get real excited, like, wow, this is a lot more fun than sitting on a movie set. You know? No, he really took to it. We got along really well. I thought he did an incredible job.
Yeah, I mean, because his musical background is more Cole Porter than, you know, rock and roll.
Yeah, but he totally got it, especially the more we went on. He became a member of the band there for a little while.
Wow.
He was into it, yeah.
Well, let's go through the discs and some of the cuts, and I'd like to get your reflections on them. First one being on disc one, I'm just going to go through each disc, The Night Watchman, which is from 81 at the Forum in Los Angeles. Now, I always thought that that was a very underrated track.
Well, you know, we were really thrilled to find that take, because we only played it live maybe 3 or 4 times. I don't remember it being part of the set for very long.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was kind of an album track. It wasn't a single or anything. But you can hear on this version that the crowd really knows the song. It comes
sure.
on and they get real excited. And the band, we came up with a good live arrangement on it. And we were really thrilled to find that track.
Plus, that song always just, to me, had a really good swing to it. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, I attribute that to Stan Lynch a lot. I mean, it just had a really good swing.
Yeah. It wasn't easy, but we did find a good groove on it, yeah.
Then we have a few cuts from the Hammersmith Odeon in mm-hmm. London. You have Even the Losers and Here Comes My Girl from 1980. When you guys, I guess, were still being called a new wave band.
Yeah, it was back in that era when they were trying to put labels on things.
Mm-hmm.
But from those particular tracks you mentioned, I really like, because you can hear the spiritual kinetic energy of the band at that stage. We're just about to break through on that album, Damn the Torpedoes. We're just about to break through into the next level of mainstream, raising our audience, you know. And you can tell that the band is just discovering that, you know, this is really going to work. This is going to take off, and we're going to go with it. And so there's that energy of discovery and excitement that you can kind of hear in the tracks that I was really happy we got those.
Then we have a couple of covers that you guys do. One is mm-hmm. I'm a Man, Bo Diddley's song,
mm-hmm.
and I Just Want to Make Love to You by Willie Dixon. One is from 2006, the other is from 1995. You know, what goes into the band deciding a cover to do?
Well, that's usually in rehearsal. Somebody will come in and go, I heard this great song, you know, we'll start playing it. And we'll go, this is good, we should put it in the show. And that's what happened with both of those. I mean, I'm a Man, we played pretty much during that 2006, I think is when it was, during that mm-hmm. tour. That was part of the set. The other song you mentioned, I Just Want to Make Love to You, what's interesting about that, I think that was from Canada, Toronto maybe.
Exactly, yes.
That was something that was not in the set list.
Oh.
And we was a real, we saw it on there, we said, do we play that at a gig? And we put it up, and it was like, wow, this is really good. And I think it must have been one of those nights where Tom just felt like, I need to throw something out into the mix here to shake things up.
Right.
So that's a very spontaneous, unrehearsed version, but that's what I like about it.
You mentioned before it's all based on the vocals, and there's just a dynamite version of Refugee from 83 in California. And I remember reading early on, when Damn the Torpedoes came out, that you guys couldn't play that song live a lot because Tom would blow his voice out.
That song is just a bitch all the way around. It was hard to record, it was hard to get the groove, it was hard to make the record, and it's hard to do live. It's a simple song, but it was hard to find a good live take. Out of all the thousands of versions of Refugee we had from all over the world, that one and American Girl were the hardest ones to find, because we wanted something really great, and there's a lot of them that were really good, but not great, you know.
Right.
And the one that we did find does have that urgency in the vocal that is so undeniably real, you know, and it's a tough song to sing.
Yeah, he's got to go for it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the vocal is really good. It's interesting, when Tom really is on his game, the band just steps up and everything works.
On another disc, there's I don't want to say strange cover, but certainly one of the more head-turning covers. It's by Rod Argent, I Want You Back Again, from 1997.
The Zombies.
Yeah, what brought that one about?
Well, Tom brought it in one day. We did this run at the Fillmore, and we did like, I don't know, 24 nights or something. And we had the freedom to try things and bring in the odd cover. And that was just a song that we always liked a lot, you know. Just it was, I don't know if it was a big hit or not, but it was just a really cool song. And we started playing it at Soundcheck one day, and we thought, this should go in the show tonight. It sounds really good.
And you have a really wonderful version of A Woman in Love from The Form from 81. And that's always been one of my favorite Tom Petty songs. And to me, that song is still not gotten its due, really. I think it's just a classic.
Well, thank you.
What went into picking that version?
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting is that wasn't going to be on the record at all.
Oh, my God.
And we went through a lot of takes, and we found that take, and I really liked it, and Ryan really liked it, but Tom was going, oh, no, I didn't sing it good. And me and Ryan just looked at each other like, oh, God, this is so good. So Ryan took it home and kind of remixed it a little bit and tidied it up a little bit and then played it for us again. And thought, oh, that's great. I didn't realize how good that was. So that kind of came in the last week of the thing, right before we were going to turn it in. We were able to get that back on there.
First off, well, you just blew my mind that it might have not made the album. I mean, to me,
yeah,
it's just one of the highlights.
Yeah, well, Ryan pulled that out of his bag of tricks at the last second there.
Amazing.
Well, thank you.
Then you have Van Morrison's Mystic Eyes.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just one of those one-chord songs that we were playing in rehearsal one day. I don't even know. I think Tom brought it in one day, and we were just messing around with it. We thought maybe we could make something out of this into the show, and it became like an encore song, because it allows Tom to kind of break the band down and do his trip, whatever he wants to do. And it turned into a really good showpiece for the band.
Have there been other Van Morrison songs you guys have done?
Yeah, we've done the odd song, I'm Tired Joey Boy. We have a really good version of that. I don't think it made the record, but... Oh, Gloria. I mean, everybody's done that one. Yeah, Van Morrison is the best. We love him.
Then on another disc, you have another, to me, very, very underrated song. One of the best rockers, Jammin' Me.
Oh, thank you.
Do you feel that song has not gotten its due?
Well, I don't know. I think it's gotten its due. When it came out, it was on the radio a lot, and people like it when we do it. It was cool that Bob helped us with the lyrics on it.
Right, Bob Dylan.
Yeah, so that's cool to have a song that we wrote with him. I guess it's got its due. I don't know. I mean, I'm happy with it.
Then we have a wonderful cover of Green Onions by Booker T and the MGs.
Oh, yeah.
Where you guys stretch out instrumentally. Did you guys just jam on that in rehearsals? Was that always just a fun song?
Well, that was another thing when we were doing the Fillmore.
Right.
That came up in rehearsal, and Ben Mutt had that organ sound and had the part. And he said, oh, let's try Green Onions. Everybody knew it. We just threw it together, and it sounded good.
And you throw another real left curve at everybody from the Fillmore set. You do a cover of Goldfinger, which totally blew my mind.
Yeah, we were real thrilled to hear that one, because we'd kind of forgotten that we ever played it. We only played it at the Fillmore, and then we kind of left it behind. But
amazing.
It's an interesting... I love that music, and it occurred to me one day this could be done with kind of a surf guitar arrangement.
Sure.
So I kind of messed around with it and showed it to the band. It took us forever to learn all those chords, but it's a great piece of music, and it used to be really fun live, so I'm glad we found that one. Good sound, too. Ryan did an incredible job on the mix on that one.
Now, do you remember what guitar you used on that?
It was a Fender Jaguar.
Okay.
But lots of reverb.
Yeah, because you really, you mentioned surf music, you really do have that surf sound on there.
Oh, thank you.
And then we have one of the standards, American Girl, from the Cow Palace in 83, and I have to imagine you have 1,000 versions of American Girl. So...
Well, exactly. That was one of the, in fact, much like Woman in Love, that was a song that until the last quarter, we didn't think we had a good version of it, and we were just going to leave it off.
Oh, my word.
We figured, you know, we can't put out a half-assed version or an okay version of American Girl. It's got to be really good.
Right.
And all the ones we listened to were pretty good, but they just, you know, we just didn't feel like we had the one. And so we finally just crossed it off the list and said, well, you know, we'd rather not put it on than put on something inferior. And then Ryan found one. About a week later, he comes in, you know, I went through the list again, and I think I found one that might be good. And as soon as we heard the vocal, we knew this has got it. This has
right.
got the urgency and the torment and the spirit and all. So we were lucky to find that one.
Plus, the band is really cooking on that one. I mean, you guys are really locked in the groove, and, you know, I mean, that's a hard song. I mean, even for a drummer, that's a hard song just to nail.
Yeah, it's easy to do it bad, but it's hard to do it But you know, and it really comes down, if the guy singing is really in the zone, that song flies. And that one, Tom's really, he's got that youthful, edgy mm-hmm. urgency that's so great, and that's pretty much what carries the song to me, anyway.
And on the next disc, we have a really cool cover, Oh Well, Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac song.
That was Tom's idea. He just came in one day and said, let's try this Fleetwood Mac song so we have an instrumental so I can rest my voice.
Well, there's some vocals on it.
Yeah, I like that one. It's fun.
And you really get to stretch out on that a bit.
I know. We did that. We played that at the Hollywood Bowl, and Mick Fleetwood came up afterwards and complimented on us.
Oh, wow.
That was one of the best versions he'd heard of it, so that was nice.
And moving on to another disc, another Petty classic, I Need to Know, from the Forum in 81. You know, again, you probably have many, many versions of that song, but what about this version stood
out
to you?
That was just that night at the Forum was a really big... We did three nights on that run at the Forum, which was kind of a great breakthrough for us to finally break through from a medium-level band to a mainstream band. And we were real excited, and the band was just breaking, and the audience was there with it, and you can feel the excitement and the discovery in the moment, and that's what's going on there, I think.
Listening back to all this stuff, did it make you nostalgic for certain eras of the band? Did it make you feel that certain eras of the band had elements that aren't there now, in a way?
Yeah, all of those things. I mean, you know, it was interesting to hear the band in our 20s, you know, just chomping at the bit, trying to blast through stuff, and there's a lot of charm in that. And it was interesting to see the growth of the songwriting and the musicianship into the present day. You can't be in your 20s your whole life.
Right.
But you can appreciate that for what it is. I mean, I was really pleased to hear how strong... You know, what was really interesting was to hear Tom's vocals in the early days. And back then, we had no monitors. I mean, we were loud, and you couldn't hear the vocals at all. And he sang so good back then. I was surprised at how strong and in pitch and powerful the vocals were, considering the conditions that he had to work with.
Yeah.
So, and you know, there's lots of little revelations like that about the band throughout the years. And then, of course, losing Howie was you know, we went through that phase where we found some stuff with him that was really sweet.
Yeah.
And then the present-day band, which is morphed into what it is now, you know, and the songs have grown and the band has grown. And I think what I found is that they're all good, you know, all eras are good. It's great to hear Tom when he's really young and singing high and screaming, but it's also, I love his voice now where it's resonant and full and expressive. So that's kind of what we came away from it with.
Listening back to all this, how do you feel about yourself as a guitar player? Because I have to imagine you hear some of the early tracks, you know, when you're, you know, again, you know, a young guitar player in your 20s, and then you listen to the latter day tracks. How do you hear your development?
You know, that's a really interesting concept. And I was thinking about that, you know, I was surprised at some of the early guitar work, how I thought it was better than I remembered. And what's interesting about what you just said is, and I think about this too with other guitar players, like people that I admire, like Clapton or Jimmy Page or Jeff Beck. It's interesting to me that guitar players that get to a point where they establish what they are, mm-hmm. and you know, and from that point for the next 30, 40 years, do they improve a lot or do they just refine what they are, you know? And I think what I found in myself is I think I've improved in the finesse and the tone, maybe in compositional skills. But I mean, I'm basically still kind of play the way I did back then too, on some level. You know, you kind of get to a point and that's how you play. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's an interesting thing because you'd think someone, say for instance, like, I don't want to get too deep into, say, Eric Clapton, you know, you'd think when he started out, how great he was. If he continued to improve exponentially till now, but I don't think people do. I think they just kind of refine what they are, you know. I mean, not comparing myself, but just
no.
Development.
What's the band up to now? What's on the horizon?
We're resting. I hope to tour next summer, but right now we're just resting.
You won't have an album. You'll tour.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I think we'll tour either way.
Okay.
Hopefully. Well, but, you know, I don't know until we get there.
Well, fantastic.
The band's in a good place. We're all real happy and just kind of waiting for next year.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
This is Joe Basso with Music Radar, and I've been speaking with Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And again, Mike, thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right, you take care.
All right.
Bye-bye now.